Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host, and it is Understanding Autism right up now, every second Tuesday and Monday, I should say, from 3 to 4, starring Kimberly Isaac and Paul Loudon. And, of course, Paul is the star of People and Games. And if you want to hear that again, a replay of that, breakradioshow.com, and probably breakradioshow.com under archives at this point. So, and I'm sure there'll be other outlets as
I'm recording them, so I'll have them up somewhere.
Oh, very, very cool. I think that's excellent. So, anyway, so Kimberly, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I didn't see you. I didn't know you wear glasses.
I do. Now I'm supposed to. Mostly if I'm looking at screens and things.
Wow.
But,
what do you think of that,
they're,
Paul?
They're made for both. Like the top part is
bifocal?
Think far, and I guess so.
I have trifocal, I think. I don't know.
I'm just very nearsighted. If I take off my glasses, I can't see anything further than about 3 inches from my face.
And wow, really?
I'm very, very nearsighted.
I know someone that has 20/15 vision. Ever hear of that?
I actually, with my contacts in, I have that. I got a prescription.
Wow.
I was really lucky at the optometrist, and they landed on one where I have better than perfect vision. So
that is very cool.
But I don't wear my contacts often. So.
I like it. So anyway, so the show today, Understanding Autism, if I heard you correctly, you said mindset.
Yes, today we're talking about
mindset.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know. We had a sneaky suspicion here that you would really, really enjoy our show today.
Yeah,
we're talking about mindset. And you know, I guess to start off, we should talk about why it's important. Because some people may be thinking, mindset, you know, how does this even relate to autism? You know, so really, something for people to consider is, and this is just what I've seen over the last 17 years too, is when people hear the word autism, this kind of feeling of panic or sense of urgency kicks in because it's so foreign and uncertain to them, and it causes anxiety. You know, especially as a parent, you find out your child has autism, like you're kind of at a loss, you know, for words and thoughts. You weren't expecting it. You don't know what it means. And when that sense of urgency or anxiety or chaos feeling set in, it's the last thing that's sort of intuitive is to slow down and think. It's sort of this panic, I got to start doing stuff. I got to start calling everybody and getting them into every single therapy. Now, that's a valid sense of urgency, but it's you have to be very careful about how you make decisions, you know, from what frame of mind you're operating from. And so we're going to talk today about mindset in terms of, you know, mindful thinking, mindful guiding, and understanding the value of taking the time to think about your own thinking. And I heard you guys in the previous show say learning about learning. I love it. We've never put that here on our show, but we should start using that. And, you know, just like with any diagnosis, you wouldn't want any just rushing in and just trying random things for anything. You really need to take the time to evaluate not only your situation, but how you're approaching your child and how you're approaching your decision-making.
Well, that totally makes sense. In life in general, a lot of people panic and they make decisions out of panic. In fact, that would be a good exercise to ask people, you know, when you make decisions, what's the standard you're using? What's the criteria used to make a decision? Some people, because of maybe wanting some type of approval, afraid of not conforming to authority, maybe out of fear. You know, there's probably so many reasons why people make decisions, but the clearer you are, I'm suspecting, and the more knowledge you have, and knowing your direction and purpose, I think you can make some good decisions if you know that.
Well, and I think in autism, it's just such a valid point where a lot of times the things that are talked about, you know, are easily found on the internet or in the media are things related to behavior, you know, symptoms, things you see. And so people are reacting to that, and they have a lot of fear, you know, understandable fear, because they don't yet understand what all of this means. They don't understand their child, and they start seeing their child very differently. You know, and if I think as, you know, understanding autism in general and our show, but understanding autism evolves, people are going to understand that it's so much more than what you see. And if you're, you know, making decisions and choosing the way you communicate and interact based on, you know, simply behaviors or things you want to change, then you're really, really missing the boat, unfortunately. So that's why we're going to open this up. Paul, do you have anything you want to talk about as far as the why piece of, you know, why we're talking about this? We're going to open it up.
Well, I think a big point to remember here when dealing with autism is that, you know, there's generally two parties involved. There's the autistic individual, and then there's the person trying to help them. And one of the reasons why mindset is so important is that, you know, behavioral, a purely behavioral approach, an approach where you're attempting to get the person with autism to change, is sometimes, if you're too panicked, especially if you're like, we have to stop these symptoms now, is sort of ignoring the fact that autism is a disability. If you have a normal person who has behaviors that you don't like, then you can get them to change those behaviors, and then they become a normal person who no longer has those behaviors. If you have an autistic person who has behaviors that you don't like, if you get rid of the behaviors, but you don't do it in the right way, if you are not careful about how you do it, then you just have an autistic individual who no longer has those behaviors. They aren't no longer autistic just because they're no longer flapping their arms, or just because, you know, they're now verbal. That doesn't mean that you've solved the underlying issues, the brain conditions. And so one example I used with Kim a few days ago, or yesterday, yeah, when we were talking about it.
Ooh, it's a good one.
You put pressure on me. Thank you.
Oh, no. It's good.
Is that imagine that you've got two boxes, a 50-pound box and a 100-pound box. And you've got one guy, he's an athlete, he's in great shape. And you've got another guy, he's a geeky computer program with arms like wet noodles. You give the thin guy the 50-pound box, and you give the strong guy the 100-pound box, because you give them, you know, what they're capable of carrying. With autism, when you're trying to treat autism just by changing behaviors, you're giving the weak guy the 100-pound box, and you're saying, hey, look, you have this weakness. We need you to get stronger, but he may not be able to do it. And then you've just left him with a box he can't carry. And that can be what happens with autism, is that, you know, the strong individual, the quote, neurotypical individual, is saying, you need to make all these changes to fit in, to become better. And they aren't making any changes on their own. They aren't adapting to the autism. They're just saying, here's the bar. You need to get up to this bar. And so, you know, the thing to remember with autism is that the person with autism has a disability. That's what it is. And that if you're expecting them to make all the changes, if you're expecting them to do all the work, and you're saying, hey, look, the weaker person in this relationship, the one who has a disability barring them from making advancement, is the only one that needs to make changes and advance, it'd be like saying to a wheelchair person, you know, look, you need to learn to walk so that you can be like the rest of us. We don't do that with people who are in wheelchairs. We say, okay, we see that you have a disability. Let's find ways that we can make you better able to fit in. So you can live a normal life, but you can live a normal life that takes into account your disability, rather than saying we need to make this disability disappear. And while autism is something that can be treated, there is no cure, and you need to always be aware that it's there. And that any treatment you take, your mindset needs to be around, how do I make this person's life better? How do I make this person able to live a normal life with their disability, rather than, how do I make it look like this disability isn't there anymore?
And I see that all the time. And the truth is you think about, I love the picture that Paul paints with that example, because I think everybody can relate to a physical example where, you know, anybody who's just starting to get in shape and they have the weaker muscles, you know, you don't give them the 50 pounds. You start them off with 5. And then you very carefully and mindfully guide them. And in autism, that's the same good approach to take. You're building neural pathways. You can think of it as a muscle, and they can be strengthened. But people, if you only see autism as behavior versus processing and brain pathways, then, you know, you're not only putting a lot of pressure on a person, but you're causing a lot of other problems that will come out later. Like, the person on the spectrum will feel very incompetent, defeated, frustrated. They're not going to want to engage with you, because they're learning that every time they're interacting with you, you're throwing so much at them, they can't deal with it. And if that was me, I certainly, you know, someone giving me the hug, walk away, you know. And so it's really important to, you know, to really be aware of your expectations and really learning about your child. So there are these, you know, common core elements of autism, but, you know, your child first. They have autism second. And so it's important to, you know, just to account for these different aspects when you're looking to help your child.
It sounds like what you're saying, how I relate to this, is you mentioned behavior and processes. Behaviors without skills or mental strategies is just random behaviors. You don't know the context in which it's used. Is that correct?
Well, and it's a huge problem in autism is some people who have, you know, excellent skills, who have high IQs, they're, you know, they have all these observable skills. You would never think they have a problem. They don't know when and why to employ the skills they have. So the world becomes, you can speak to this better than I can. Sorry. You know, how it affects, you know, a person.
You're doing fine. I didn't really have anything to add there.
Okay. Well, I didn't want to speak for you, so.
I mean, we've talked about this. This happens sort of with Kim and I a lot, is that I'll tell her something about how I think or something, and she'll realize or say, wow, I never, you know, knew you interpreted that things that way, because the way I express things seems normal enough most of the time. And even Kim, who's an expert in autism and has known me for years, you know, is surprised when she finds out that, you know, while I express things this way, it's because I've learned that this is the way people expect them to be expressed, but that the underlying thought processes and interpretation of the world are still very different than what would be interpreted as sort of a normal way to interpret these things. And that, you know, a lot of my behaviors then, I do them more because I know they're expected than for really understanding how they fit in a normal social situation and what the cause for them is.
And I think it's important to add, I mean, from my end, being a professional and just being someone who cares about the population, so if you're a parent or a friend or whatever, I mean, no one has all the answers. And I know as a professional it's stressful because I know we're expected to have all these. We don't. We're learning with you. I mean, we have the general, you know, we have the education, we have the knowledge. But when you're working with an individual person, you know, that person, just, you don't fit them into a textbook. You account for who they are and what they've learned and where they're at in their life. And I'm always learning. And it used to be a series of surprises with Paul. Yesterday I had one. I was kind of excited to have one, actually, because just when I think I figured it out, it's kind of a good reminder that I haven't. And that's okay. Like, it's a process that you're learning about each other. And so the value of thinking about thinking is you're really taking the time not only to get to know the person, but you're going to get information that's going to help you to make the most effective, respectful decision on how you interact with them.
Well, that totally makes sense. So why don't we take a quick break, and then I want to explore a little bit more. You said the when and the why. I also want to throw the how in there. And the way I think about that, the when actually and the where is environment, because that's important, how to interact in what environment. The why usually relates to some types of motivation, you know, what motivates someone to do that. And without just incorporating the process, you just have behavior, but you may not have motivation. This is Understanding Autism. We'll be right back.
Beer and Bomb and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues. corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Reidenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You are listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, live at the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. And this is Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday of each month from 3 to 4. Paul Loudon in studio along with Kimberly Isaac. We've been talking about mindset. Oh, one of my favorite topics. I appreciate both of you bringing that up. We were talking about when and why I threw the howl in. But the way I see things is the when and where would be environment. It answers the question, environment. Behaviors would be what you do. You know, it answers the question, what. Skill sets is how you do stuff. It answers the question, how. Beliefs and values, motivation would be related to that. And why you do something. Identity is who is doing it. And it sounds like you're saying that it's good to incorporate a little bit higher processes, skills, beliefs, values, and identity. How does that work, Kim, as someone that helps people in autism, a specialist in autism, from answering not just when and what, which is environment and behavior, but how, why, and who? Is that something you get into? That's high-level processes.
It is. Well, starting just with something everybody can understand is, you know, autism is a processing difficulty in the brain, and the architecture of the brain is different on someone who has autism versus someone who doesn't. People who develop, you know, neurotypically, they're able to process many pieces of information simultaneously. So we're able to, you know, just taking a person, for example, we're able to look at a person and process their facial expressions, you know, literally what they look like, their language, their gestures, and the context, you know, where they're sitting, what they're doing. We can do that simultaneously. For people on the spectrum, they have more of a single channel processing system where they can't, it doesn't come in as a stream. It comes in, you know, one thing at a time or maybe two, you know, depending on the person. And so expecting someone to be seeing and processing everything we're seeing isn't reasonable because their brains aren't seeing what we're seeing. And we need to be aware of that. Otherwise, our expectations are such that we're setting up that other person, you know, to fail.
So it's a single processing, you're saying, system. So it's like only be able to see one channel or one thing at a time.
Think of like on the freeway, the highway, some highways have like four lanes. You know, we have four lanes in our brains, and people who haven't had, you know, mindful guiding and developed certain parts of their brain, they have narrower, more single pathways that aren't connected. So they might have, you know, the same number of pathways, but they're not interconnected the way that ours are. And we need that system to be able to process and get the big picture, the context, you know, intent, communicative intent. Now, no one ever gets it right. We were talking about this yesterday. Nobody ever has 100% right, you know, guesses or assumptions on why someone's doing what they're doing or problem solving or whatever, but we can take pretty good guesses based on all of those channels we're processing. So how we're making our decisions is very different than a person, you know, on the spectrum. And so learning about how they do that will only help you to relate to them, to A, you know, teach them and guide them, and B, to have a more productive, healthier, happier, more respectful relationship.
So that's interesting. It sounds like what you're saying is that the sensory data that comes in is not processed in a way that connects the dots. You may see a visual aspect, but it's not going beyond that. It's like, well, let's see, adding sound, for example. So it's like watching a movie, maybe you don't have sound, so you're not exactly getting the full meaning of what's happening, because what you say is one thing, but how you say something is quite different.
Well, think about this. Imagine you've got headphones on, and in one ear you've got one talk show, and then the other ear you've got a different talk show, and you're interested in one. A normal person can listen to just one of those talk shows and sort of ignore the other person or the other show. So you listen to what's coming in your right ear, and you ignore the one coming in your left ear. Someone on the autism spectrum may not be able to force their attention to just one, that they're both coming in. It's what I'm hearing. It's not two separate things. They don't have those two processes in the brain, one blocking out this ear and the other one focusing on that. So they might have a hard time. Now imagine it's music in one ear and a talk show in the other. That's even easier. But a person lower down on the autism spectrum may not be able to distinguish and separate those. So the music keeps them from being able to hear the talk show, even though if it's just instrumental music, most neurotypical people, it wouldn't even interfere in the slightest.
Right.
Now, go down further on the autism spectrum. Imagine the lights in the room. We've got fluorescent lights here. They're flickering very slightly at a very high frequency. You don't even see it. But someone on the autism spectrum who's lower down might be bothered by the buzz of the fluorescent lights. And because of just that, it's interfering with what they're hearing. Even though they're two separate senses now, it's interfering with what they're hearing. And for them, it's very similar to have two different voices talking in different ears. And we could distinguish the two different voices, one in the left ear and one in the right ear, but imagine if both ears were getting both voices. Then you would start having a hard time. That, you know, you've got two different radio shows playing at the same time coming into both of your ears, and you only want to listen to one. That becomes difficult. But that difficulty is what someone on the autism spectrum might experience with much simpler processes than you would consider something that should be difficult. And that's sort of what Ken was talking about with like the multiple highways in the mind, is that the ability to separate inputs is something that a neurotypical person can often do much better than someone on the autism spectrum. And as you get further and further down the spectrum, those inputs become more overwhelming to the point where any input can be too much. And that's where you get the ones who, you know, have behaviors that may seem unusual because the inputs coming in are too much for them to handle just in everyday, what we would consider calm and relaxing situations.
So it sounds like, wow, that'd be a major distraction then for most people.
It often can be if you can't separate or distinguish things. Kim noticed that I often notice what song's playing in a restaurant. She has no idea what's
playing.
I can't
even hear it.
And it's because it's there. It's always there in my head, whatever they're playing quietly on the speakers. And so we might be mid-conversation, and I'll just look away. Oh, it's that song. Oh, sorry. You know.
But see, I can tune it out. I can tune it out.
Right.
You tune it out by habit. You learn at a young age that there are background noises, and you develop techniques for tuning it out. But if I asked you, how do you tune it out? Could you explain it to me in a way that I could do it?
Well, and here's the thing.
That's my project. I'm going to work on that.
Well, no, and here's the thing. This is where guiding comes in, is in typical development when you have to, you know, the child and the parent or the primary influence in the child's life, there's a feedback system that's created. So this child is able to learn from their parent. They start to learn through their actions and through, you know, their experiences with them, what's relevant, you know, and what's less relevant. You know, in moments, and they learn through observing. So if you have someone, so a child with autism, who's not able to focus in and learn from that relationship, learn from others, they don't learn what's, you know, what's relevant as a culture, as a population, what we consider to be relevant. And so they might be looking at you and, you know, it looks like they're, you know, paying attention under our definition, but they're not receiving the things that we think we're sending necessarily.
And that's where the whole mindset thing comes in, is that if you don't understand what's actually going on, if you see your child getting distracted by a background noise and you convince them not to get distracted by that noise, they still hear it and they may still be losing attention to it, but now they're not turning their head anymore. Now they're not looking at it or talking about it anymore. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're picking up more of what you're saying, because they're still hearing it. And you still haven't worked on the core problem, which is that they can't really filter and focus, but rather you've worked on the behaviors that they do when they fail rather than what's causing the failure in the first place. So mindset is really about taking the time to learn about autism and understand autism, and taking the time to really have this broader understanding of how you do things as well, so that when you do approach attempting a therapeutic solution or attempting to progress on it, that you're approaching it from a position of knowledge where, you know, one thing Kim was talking about, how therapists often, you know, they don't have all the answers. And I had this mental picture in my head that that they're walking down a path, that everyone relating to autism is walking down a path. And often the therapists are a few steps further ahead of everyone else, where they know what's coming ahead. They say, okay, the next few steps, there might be a rock here. But they don't know what's much further ahead because they haven't gotten there yet either. And if you take that even further, you've got the therapists who are walking ahead, the neurotypical people, the parents and the family who are in the middle, and then the children with autism who are walking a few further steps behind. And you need to be careful not to leave them behind, where, you know, you have to show encouragement. You can't just drag them along on a leash because they're going to stumble and trip, you know, that you need to create a situation where they want to follow you down this path.
And the thing is, it really comes down to, you know, slowing down. So if you have someone internally who is unable to process as quickly, you know, you need to give them a chance. It's just like with walking. If you had someone who was on crutches, I'm thinking of physical exercise here. No, crutches. You would understand that it's going to take them longer to walk from the parking lot to the destination, and you would walk slower with them, and you would go with them. It's the same thing on an internal level for autism. They need a slower pace in order to take in, deliberately take in, what we essentially want them to be seeing. So speeding up is never really a good thing, which is, parents will hear this and go, but the world is fast. You know, my child, how are they ever? But the thing is, you have to slow down to speed up in the big picture. You have to meet the person where they're at in order to help them grow.
And I have a sort of analogy for the whole just starting fast thing. Think about a car, and you're at a light, and the speed limit after the light is 60. For whatever reason, there's not lights on roads that are 60 or 80 even, something quite fast. If you just floor it, your tires will spin, you'll lose control of the car, you may even get in a wreck. But if you accelerate slowly, you can get up to that fast speed. And once you're at that speed, you're caught up. And that's sort of what it is with autism, is that you have to accelerate up to that speed on a slope that the road, just surface conditions, your tires, the child can handle. You can't just start going at that speed and expect them to maintain control.
Right. And so that's where, you know, maybe we can talk about this after the break, but the concept of, you know, mindful guiding. And when we come back, we can talk about more about mindful guiding and, you know, maybe give you a tip even. We have a tip for
people. Tip of the day. Well, that's good. Mindful guiding after the break. Also, I want to, I think I solved the issue. How do you tune something out? When we come back, I'm going to suggest something, see if you think it's going to work. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Birenbaum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking live at the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. This is Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday of each month from 3 to 4, starring Kimberly Isaac and Paul Loudon. We're talking about mindset. Mindset is huge in every element of life. Now, you wanted Kim to talk a little bit about mindful guiding. Before we do this, how do you tune someone out? Let me just see if you guys will think this is something you can do. I've tried it. It works. It may not work for everyone, but it's something that's interesting. What if you pretend you have a volume control in your brain and you're able to turn it down? And what if you even had magical powers where you can move the sound from where your ears are, but you can move it actually further and further and further out so it becomes fainter and fainter, even maybe slow down the sound at normal pace, and it now becomes like...
But here's the thing.
Yeah. I know. What's your thing? I have a thing.
Remember when I was talking about hearing both voices in both ears?
Yes.
So it's one sound. So how do you separate them?
What if you had a volume control just on one side?
No, but imagine that like I said, the one that would be difficult for normal people.
Yeah.
That both voices are both sides. So you have, you know, two radio shows going on at once, and they're
right.
both coming into both ears. So you have, you know, Bob and Joe in the morning talking in your left ear, and Bob and Joe talking in your right ear.
Right.
How do you separate them that way?
That might be harder.
And that's the thing for people with autism often, is that even if one's coming in one ear and one's coming in the other, they're still one sound. They're merged before they can do conscious things like turning
down
the volume.
Well,
that's where the problem can be,
is
being able to separate them first.
And that's
that
the difference.
Multiple inputs often come in as a single channel. And that's where the problem
is. I guess. That's a great explanation
of
it.
Not just separating it, but I'm also thinking, you know, this is something
I'm trying to put in a framework that people can imagine, but it's a lot more complicated.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to...
We can tell something to go into the background. That's not... You know, we can have... And so here's... I can imagine some of the people I work with. I could say, hey, why don't you try this. But all they would be able to focus on is that. So instead of focusing on the music, they were focusing on that one thing, and they're still not able...
That's true. That is one activity. So while they're tuning something out,
it's still a single
they
song.
Don't have room to listen anymore.
Yeah, that's
right.
So
if I'm trying to talk to them and the music's distracting them, for me to tell them what to do, it doesn't make a difference.
So that might be a tough one.
Yeah, so it's a really complicated situation. That's why this understanding is important, because if you want the child to be able to help, first you have to understand those limitations so that you can help the child, that you can say, okay, this is what they are and aren't able to do, so here's what I can do to help them get further down this path. So anyway, mindful guiding.
Yeah, mindful guiding. Well, I'm just going to give you, you know, just some thoughts about it. You know, mindful guiding is a term we use in RDI, which is Relationship Development Intervention, and really focuses on, you know, a parent, you know, one, learning about their child's processing and understanding where they're at, and setting up situations for them to be competent, systematically growing them from where they're at. You know, setting up different situations. If you can think about it from a physical standpoint, it is like, you know, helping them weight train, like giving them fives and then sevens, you know, the dumbbells, and gradually helping them develop in that way. But the mindful piece is extremely important, because you learn to think about how you're thinking about things. And when you're slowing down, you're able to learn to highlight processes versus just outcomes. You know, thinking about, well, why do I do this? I don't just want my child to learn to do the skill, because eventually when they're out on their own, that's not enough. They need to be able to have the processes behind what they're doing and why, you know, to whatever level is appropriate for the age of the child. But the point is to the processes. So learning to highlight processes mindfully is another key aspect. And that kind of moves us into the concept of thinking about thinking, which is, you know, it's really hard to teach someone that if you're not doing it yourself. And it is a lot of work. And some parents, you know, it's overwhelming. And most people in general, I think in the population, you know, some people, you hear a lot of books on mindfulness and, you know, sometimes you hear it in the context of yoga and stuff like that. But you know, people are in a rush a lot of the time in life in general, and it really is a habit that you learn to develop, is to slow down and just, you know, start asking yourself things, you know, because really whatever you're communicating and setting up for your child is what you're transferring to them, is what you're showing them what's most important. So if you're always in a hurry and you're always response-oriented, you're teaching them that that's how it's supposed, I'm supposed to respond all the time. That's not the experience of life that they're going to, I mean, that's not the experience of life you want to set up for them, because they're going to end up failing in interactions and situations a lot.
So how do you teach that? I mean, are you saying that you just slow down and ask more questions about thinking, or Is there
not,
other
not
ways?
The trial. No, I mean, there's kind of a systematic process to this in the program. There's a lot of things. I mean, the first step is, you know, education. And that's really education about the processing issues of autism, not just the behaviors you see, the hand slapping, the toe walking, and all the things that you hear. But it goes deeper. So it's education. And then it's also just, you know, assessing the family. You know, every family has a circumstance that that is unique. So you can't just give a family, you know, there's not like a cookie cutter approach to this. I mean, there's a protocol. But and then the parents learn how to kind of do some self-query and, you know, learn to construct meaningful interactions for the child to make discoveries. Discoveries about, you know, themselves, things that will help them to feel competent. Because the more competent they feel, that's where you end up with motivation. If someone doesn't feel like they can handle something, they're not going to volunteer to walk into it. Nobody would. You know, so really setting up those situations is something you would learn, you know, in the RDI program. Something in general that's part of it, but just useful for anybody listening is, you know, starting to do some self-queries and slow down and really think about, you know, why you're making certain decisions that you are, you know, is because there are things. I mean, sometimes we'll just say, because I did. Well, not really true. You had a lot of thoughts behind it. It's okay. They're in the background. That's typical development. You don't even know. They're subconscious. You don't even know you're doing them. So you're bringing those practices to the forefront of your mind to transfer them to your children. But it starts with being aware, self-aware.
And that's, is that how you go about not only with someone on the spectrum, but since this show is about mindset, it's also the mindset of the parents, the caretaker, the therapist as well. So the collective mindset, I mean, because if one person, I always said, let's put it this way, a chain is as strong as its weakest link. And if you have, you know, a therapist, maybe a child on the spectrum, let's say in this case, was, you know, working with the proper mindset, but the parent or the caretaker wasn't, that can have a dramatic impact.
And that's the big goal, is focusing on the parents and caretaker mindsets, because that is often the weakest link, that, you know, the child on the spectrum, depending on their current state of development, often can't really contribute that much to the process. And when they can contribute to the process, the amount they can contribute is often limited. Like I said earlier, is they're the one who's only capable of carrying a very small weight, and you can't really ask them to carry more, or it's just going to grind them to a stop entirely. And so the mindset of the caretaker, the person who can carry bigger weights and push larger burdens, is really important, because without them being active in the process and being aware of what the process is, there's really not that much progress that can be made in a lot of cases.
Well, and it's important on a lot of fronts. I mean, thinking about, you know, mindfulness, I mean, sometimes the parents are in pretty bad shape themselves in terms of being depressed and overwhelmed. And, you know, sometimes, you know, talking about mindful guiding and learning parent training programs, sometimes parents will just feel like, wow, I don't know if I can do this. You know, I'm so emotionally in a place that, you know, and that's important to be mindful of too. Because, you know, something we really focus on in RDI in the beginning is obstacle reduction. So we look at what are the obstacles in the way of developing this mindful guiding relationship. And sometimes, you know, it actually never starts with the child. It always starts with what's going on, you know, around it, because you want to create an optimal environment. And so, you know, mindfulness in terms of your own self. I mean, to parents listening who feel like, wow, I really just can't, and I've met you guys, some of you guys, where you really just really need a personal break. Your mindfulness may involve, don't include your child, just include yourself. You know, don't think, because sometimes I talk to parents about this and I say, okay, start thinking about your thinking. And they automatically think in terms of their child. And I say, no, just focus on you. Just get really aware of yourself. And sometimes people think, well, what's the point of that? Well, the point of that is to be in a good position to transfer thought processes and create opportunities. Because if you're not in that mindset, you may not be highlighting the most, you know, important, relevant, you know, or effective, you know, point that you're trying to make. So mindfulness in general is the concept. And in the RDI program, we teach mindful guiding. And that's where you gradually help your child to develop the processes they need to be able to understand the world better, feel more competent, and, you know, just achieve their full, whatever, you know, their full potential.
Now, I like the term obstacle reduction, because I think people like to break through obstacles, but it seems easier if you can eliminate obstacles, then you're automatically free, clear to move forward. A lot of people like to fight obstacles. Now, the question is obstacle reduction. And then why don't we take a break right now, our last segment, and this is the question. You can contemplate it very deeply during this break, and we'll come back and answer it. Is obstacle, part of obstacle reduction, identifying, is it external or internal? And we'll be right back.
Beer and Bomb and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking Live at the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Dave Isaac, the host, alongside Paul Alden and Kim Isaac, stars of Understanding Autism, every second Monday and Tuesday from, I should say, every month on Monday and Tuesday.
Yes, the second Monday and Tuesday
yeah,
every month.
That's right, from 3 to 4. Anyway, we're talking about mindset. Really, really important. Whether you're on the spectrum or not, doesn't matter. Mindset is everything, in my opinion. And when we left the break, and now we're back, obstacle reduction. Is it important to identify where it's coming from, external versus internal? Kimberly, on the break, you said you know the answer. What is the answer?
The answer is both. The answer is both.
You need to identify it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I mean, something that I do in, you know, initial family assessments is we really examine the big picture. Mm-hmm. And sometimes families, you know, aren't ready to start the RDI process. I've worked with some families actually in that moment it was more important to prioritize something else. The health of a parent was really bad. That had to take priority over moving forward and adding more, you know, the overall health of the family. You know, I've encountered situations where, you know, the parents needed counseling, and that was a priority because nothing was ever going to go anywhere until those foundational issues that were presenting as obstacles were managed better. You know, so we really look at a lot of different things. Now, we don't treat all those things. We refer people out for what's appropriate, and that doesn't always happen. So it's not like you meet with an RDI consultant and they send you to 50 people. That's not what happens, but sometimes it does. And, you know, sometimes an obstacle is just evaluating your schedule. You know, your schedule is not allowing time for you to slow down and spend quality time with your child. Well, we help you with that. We really support you. And what is the next step we need to take to create the environment to help, you know, so you can start guiding your child in a productive way? And so sometimes it is schedule, and I'll sit with parents and I'll help them look at things and help them prioritize and create the space. Sometimes it's, you know, they need extra support. Like, let's find you some help, some outside help, so you can have a break. You know, so it's really brainstorming. The initial part of the program is really looking at the overall family structure and helping kind of position the family in a place where they can productively guide their kids. And then from there, we move on to, you know, these developmental, you know, parent objectives, developmental objectives, and it moves forward from there.
So can an obstacle appear to be external, but really internal because of one's interpretation of what it means?
Well, of course it can.
Oh, that was good.
And here's
she knew that one right away.
No, of course it can. But the thing, and this is where I'm a huge fan of slowing down, probably like really slow, like I'm snail pace, is, you know, I want to spend time getting to know the parents or the people that I work with. If I don't feel I have enough information or something doesn't seem in alignment, I really want to make sure that I gather enough information in order to make an effective, ethical next step recommendation of some sort. Sometimes, you know, I've found that something on the outside, you know, something maybe parents are telling me isn't correlating with what I'm seeing or, you know, vice versa or something. Well, that's good information for me or for any professional on how to guide a parent to what their personal next step is. And, you know, this is a marathon. You know, having a person in your child with autism, you know, it's not something that you can sprint and, you know, be done with and it's over. I mean, it's a marathon. And marathons, you know, you have to pace yourself. And sometimes it's helping families learn to pace themselves. And, you know, because again, I mean, if parents are burning out, who is going to be there for your kids? If you're letting your health slip and you're, you know, not paying attention, you have to learn to prioritize healthfully, you know, to where everybody's getting their needs met so that you, again, you can provide the opportunities, the most healthy, typical learning opportunities for your child to help them grow.
Is one of the qualities that you hope when you do these family assessments is a concept called acceptance?
Well, I don't actually focus on that, but what I think happens is through education and the slowing down process, that has helped parents. I mean, everybody's in a really different place on how they handle these things. But it leads down that path better. But acceptance where it's productive acceptance. You know, acceptance like, oh, I'm giving up. No, not like that, but it's productive. But I think once you learn about the core deficits in terms of processing and you start to experience what it feels like to productively guide your child, your sense of confidence as a parent is restored. And it gives you kind of a new hope and faith and acceptance kind of at the same time. And that's one of the things that I absolutely love about RDI is it really empowers parents. It restores their natural, you know, parental intuition, and it gives them, you know, a redo of the way maybe they would have wanted to guide their child from the beginning, but didn't understand all the bits and pieces that went along with the obstacles they were having.
Do parents ever have regret? And that's what I mean by acceptance.
Oh,
also, where you know, I mean, you only can do what you can do. You only know what
right.
you know, and
yeah.
then you come in.
Well,
and
that I help them with, yes. I do help them.
Yeah, because that, you know, you don't want to regret, say, well, I should have done it. Well, you didn't
yeah.
really know. You're doing the
right.
best you can at any point.
Well, I absolutely reinforce that. I mean, I can be supportive to that process, and I don't know any parent that I've worked with that has just said, yeah, I'm over it. I'm good with, you know, but they are in a place where they understand where they're at and they understand the value. Because everything parents do has some value, whether it's learning what didn't work or learning something about themselves or their child. And you take everything as information. You don't put the judgment on it and you move forward. You know, so I do help parents to, you know, kind of harness and their energies in the places that a forward moving place. And stuff. But it's hard. I mean, parents, it's hard for them. They feel really bad about themselves. They feel like failures. And so something that I think is just so important that is often overlooked is working with parents, not just the kids, but the parents too, because they need that in order to, you know, get back to a place of health and, you know, just kind of restore the family unit. And again, you know, to ultimately to guide their kids, which is what they want to do.
So if we had to sum it up, would it be something like this? One of the goals would be congruent, harmonious, and empowering mindset in a collective sense to go forward?
Yes, you use such grand words.
Not bad. Paul, I could write a book. Wouldn't it be congruent, harmonious, and
no,
empowering?
No, but it's true. I mean, and when you think of the family, you know, you think it is important for people to, you know, to be learning, and you want to be on the same page as much as you can. Because, again, that could cause an obstacle in the family if each parent is completely in conflict, you know. So things like that are extremely important. And you have to remember, this is your life. It's your life. It's your child's life. It's a good thing to slow down and assess.
That totally makes sense. And can you believe this show just zip by mindset? You can never get enough of it. And it's really the... what will make the difference of success or not, I believe, mindset.
I agree
very,
with that, too.
Very important. So how do they get in touch with you, Paul and Kim?
Well, do you want to talk to people about our website? I know we haven't really been talking about it too much.
Yeah,
but...
we have a website now. It's understanding-autism.info. We have forms there you can sign up for. We're hoping that some of our audience will start opening discussions there. We'll be posting blog posts there occasionally and announcing anything upcoming through there and through our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/understandingautismradio. You can get in contact with Kim or I directly, just with Paul or Kim at understanding-autism.info.
Fantastic. This is so important. And if you want to hear a replay, you could hear it on Facebook or just Break
right
Radio
now it's
Show.
At breakradioshow.com.
Okay.
We will be having them back on iTunes soon, hopefully.
Okay, very cool. Well, Paul Allen, thank you.
And we'll be back next week.
That's right, next Monday.
Talking about Halloween.
Oh, really? Halloween.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we realize the challenges, costumes, parties, things like that can always be an interesting thing for someone on the spectrum. So we're going to talk about some tips and general concepts there.
Very interesting. And you'll be calling in, I
think. I'll be calling in, yeah.
All right, very cool. Anyway, everyone have a great night. Again, breakradioshow.com. Listen to the replay. Have a good night.